Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Fred. I am responsible. I am accountable. I am capable of assisting people to find their true voice and then deliver it effectively into the world around us. With 40 years in mental health, 32 of them as a psychiatrist, and then a massive amount of conversations, including podcasting and expert speaking, keynote speaking, I have the opportunity to really see the magic that it takes to find one's authentic self and then deliver it effectively into the world. And if you're like me, you can see that now more than ever, that's what's called for. So today is that day. Now is that time. Come forth. Join me in the broadcast. You'll see on the other side of this at True Voice with Dr. Fred.
Oh, man, I can't hear a damn thing you're saying. Not a good way to start out, Fred. Come on.
Okay, can you hear me now?
There we go. All right, there we go.
Yeah, the wiring is a little weird here, so we just...
Yeah, I guess so, in more ways than one. We're back to being cut off again. Yeah. Get your wiring straight there, buddy. There we go. All right.
Let's try this. Maybe that's
better. Let's try that. Perfect.
Well, okay, so you can hear me now good?
Yeah. Now we've got this part of the wiring taken care of. Now we have to work on the neurological wiring.
Well, you know, I don't know anything about any neurological wires. These things have been burnt out for some years now. And as far as I know, they're not recoverable. It's not, not revivable, So there's some neurons that are burnt out and that we just have to work with that. It's just a part of really getting the divine nature of life includes neurological burnout.
It makes us more fun that way.
Yeah.
No one needs a full set.
Yeah. Well, you know, today we have a guest, but before we have a guest, I'd like you to go out on a limb a little bit and let the guest know a little bit about what we're going to talk about. Now, here's the thing. William is an amazing guy. Okay. William is here.
Handsome mofo too.
I knew you'd think that. And really, yeah. I don't want you guys to go much further than that, at least on this call. If we can just kind of keep it right at that, that'd be great. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, because I'm sure he thinks you're
understood. Understood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's rare that I'm the third most handsome man in the room, but in this situation, there's no question that's true. So, oh boy, let's see, where was I?
So you wanted me to tell William what this conversation.
Well, I want to give.
I never have any idea what we're going to.
I know,
talk
right?
About.
What do you? So I'm going to give you a little clue what William's about, and then we could talk a little bit about where we're going with this. So
perfect, sounds good.
I don't know is the answer. Yeah. I have no idea what this guy is about. He's been around the planet. He's got story after story after story. So many stories that one day I sat down and I decided to like clip them out and see if they actually could fit in a 37-year-old life.
Doesn't add up. Huh?
Doesn't add up.
36.
Okay.
36 now. Yeah. So I'm just like, well, that didn't happen. If the guy's entirely full of crap, it's still fun. Like we've had a few people on the show that are so full of it that they're still fun to interview.
Yeah, man, a not true story is even more interesting than a true story.
That's right. So we can go with a lot of ways.
Hey, make it up. Make it up as we go.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do then. What we'll do, you know, Sam and I last week, we took this conversation down a serious rabbit hole. It was just the two of us. And we had a conversation that you would really have enjoyed immensely, actually. It was a conversation about death and dying and suicide and appropriate. What was that conversation even about, Sam? We haven't even reviewed that thing, man. That thing was
I haven't
wild.
Even listened. It's now off in the ether somewhere and recorded forever in the annals of internet history.
It would be a tough one
to reproduce, that's for sure. It was one of those things that just had to happen spontaneously.
And we have it somewhere, but we have not published it or posted it. So you could see that Sam is kind of a wild hair. And sometimes we've left our guests in a lot of pain after we were done with them. Yeah. And I...
Sorry, I brought my own pain today, so...
Oh, that's good.
We're good.
Welcome to the Fred Moss torture chamber.
So why don't we go like this? William is like my cinematographer at this point, but he's also my friend and he takes care of my cats. He's a fellow nomad who's like on the road way deeper than I ever have been. He lives in a van that you can actually see if I open up the window right out here. He's really had a multiplicity of jobs and insights and awarenesses and growth and development. He's a bona fide empath, shaman. What is that? What is the one that you have? You got some shit like going on like that. What is that?
Well, I like everything I've heard so far.
He's a major musician as well. So you could, awesome. Yeah. You could pull out that thing of yours, that little guitar of yours, if you want. I think he watched you, right? Didn't I show a tape? Yeah, he did watch
it. Yeah, and I heard it live.
Yeah, well. Live, right? That day when I called you.
And oh yeah, sure.
That way mm-hmm. he was in the house. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool.
So I think today, why don't we go with this? Why don't I just put William on the spot right away with the Fred Moss Welcome to Humanity entry line of. You know, William Curry, who are you? And step up to Mike, let us know a little bit about who you are.
Yeah. So, William Curry, who I am is such a interesting question. Still exploring that myself, right?
That's the important thing. I like that right off the bat. Yeah.
Yeah. The main thing about me is I dive deep into story. What is story? Not just the stories that we share with each other, but also the stories that we tell ourselves. Why aren't they the same stories, right?
The inner narrative versus the external narrative. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
the psyche versus the persona.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And how that shapes the way we actually tell stories in the real world. Mm-hmm. The way that we find value or don't find value in the experiences that we have in life. And all that. So storytelling, and it started with, I started off as a filmmaker, a photographer. So I've had quite a few amazing experiences. So I was a underwater cinematographer, filming sharks 1 week, working on storm chasing TV shows the next week. And just experiencing and not having any time to process that. And now that I'm in a time where things have slowed down, I'm going back through these old stories and realizing that the way I used to tell these stories, I'm still telling them in the mindset of who I was 5 years ago. And so sometimes as they tell these stories, sometimes they come off. Sometimes that old negative voice inside peeks through. But in reality, that's not who I feel that I am anymore. So going back and into these stories and telling them from a perspective of today, right? Who I am today and talking about that journey.
Yeah.
Love that.
So when you were on the water, photographer, cinematographer, what were some of the high points and low points of that job?
Well, the low points besides being physically 100 feet underwater, I can't tell you that there were low points. There was when I first started diving, there's that initial fear, right? The fear of the open water, the fear of breathing through an apparatus. First time I saw a shark, right? It's terrifying. First time I saw an octopus, that was terrifying too, you know? But the ocean has a really beautiful way of just kind of holding you, brings you back into the womb. To feel the same temperature, equal pressure all the way around you. Even sound is really interesting underwater because a sound over here actually comes at you from every direction. There's no reverberation or anything. And so there's this really, really clearing experience that happens. Mm-hmm. On the other side of fear is everything that's beautiful. And And so getting underwater, now when I go diving, it's like, it's all beautiful. There's the hardest thing is just the seasickness for me, I guess, being on the boat.
I got so many questions. I'm trying to think of where to start. All right. First question. Whether it's an external story that you're sharing through your persona, your personality, and I mean a general you're, not you specifically, or an internal story told by the inner recesses of your unconscious psyche and so forth. How do we define the storyteller? Who is this storyteller?
That is a really good question. I'd like to start with the part that I find most interesting about this, right? It happened during some video work that I was doing. Actually, it was the event that I met Fred at. And I was running around with a camera in a, yeah, there it is. I got a journal like that too.
Our 6'8" friend was involved in that.
Yeah. That's how we met.
That's the connection.
Sam's
close with Sam.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. And so running around with a camera, I got to see everybody in their space, in their zone, just being themselves. And then the second they saw the camera, right, you see them physically change. You see physical change. Their actions completely change, right? Mm. They may have been humorous in one moment, all of a sudden now they're stiff and rigid, right? Some people are the opposite, right? Where they were just relaxed and not very talkative in their normal life. And then all of a sudden they cameras on them and all of a sudden this other person comes out, right? And there's nothing wrong with that, right? Like, we are all different people with different people, right? Different people bring out different aspects of us. So there's nothing wrong with being different people, but the goal here is to understand why, right? And to reconcile that and to pick and choose, right? I want to bring my best self with whoever I'm with, whoever I'm choosing to spend time with, right? I want to bring all the best parts of me. I'm choosing to spend my time with that person. They deserve that, right? I deserve that as well, right?
Sure.
So it goes through that. So now when we get down to this, like, who is the storyteller, right? The storyteller, well, I mean, that's, we have to go back to, like, why do we tell stories, right? What was the first story ever told, right? Like, what was probably the first story ever told? It's probably, don't go off into the jungle over there because that tiger is going to eat you. Go over here instead, right? So it was to explain, yeah. And so it was to share information, but also to share emotion.
I think it was about like how many women the guy had sex with. I think that had a much more likelihood. And overestimating that number a lot too, right? Like, a guy making up, but who knows who that first story was, but that's a good point.
Well, I mean, we've all told that story, I think, right? I think it's a story that at least every male.
So I want to just pause there for a second because this is very interesting. And I think you're probably onto something and this is probably quite accurate. The question then I think becomes, when does self-consciousness set in? What are the contributing factors to self-consciousness? Because I had a mentor once who shared something with me that I very much resonated with. She said, self-consciousness is the absence of the awareness of the self. So essentially, it's like looking into the mirror and looking at the reflection and saying, well, that's me. But what we're actually seeing in the mirror is we are seeing a physical reflection of the photons that our eyes perceive that is reflected back to us through a physical object that happens to hold the characteristic that it can reflect back to us. And the photons then are received by our brain and we create an abstraction that is our physical form. And so that's not actually us. And in a very similar respect, when our thoughts create a hybridization or an amalgamation of all of these thoughts and beliefs, then we call that amalgamation who we believe ourselves to be, but that's actually just a mirror for the mental activity that's occurring inside of our brains. That also is not us. So where does self-consciousness come on the scene is where what I'm wondering.
Yeah.
Do you have any theories about that?
Yeah, there's one thing that in particular that came into mind during that, right? In relation to storytelling, right? And it's kind of like, if you ask somebody what happened, right? And they say, oh, well, I woke up at this time, I did this, then I went to work at this time. That's not actually what happened. It's just a bunch of abstractions, right? You've actually removed yourself from the storytelling, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so like when we talk about like the self-conscious thing, what it is it's, you know, the brain's running a program, right? Mm-hmm. And it's running this program that's based upon your past experiences, your past traumas. It has this system that thinks it knows how you're best going to be accepted, right? Mm-hmm. And that program's mm-hmm. constantly running. And I think mm-hmm. the thing is when anybody's given a stage, is given an audience, that program is very loud, right? Mm-hmm. And us as the being, right, as the non-abstraction, we kind of hide away from it and let the self take over. We feel that it's rapid fire. We feel that we're right on the edge there, that we have to just create this. We have to explain who we are as an entire person in a small amount of time, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a really scary thought, right? It's right. Like you meet, you know, even just think of like a first date for an example, right? It's like that first date telling a story, and really that's how like the storytelling, where these observations came from. I spent a lot of time in cafes, and so I see a lot of first dates, I see a lot of job interviews, a lot of business meetings, and the stories that are told are all this of the ego. They're all these fleshless abstractions. Right. Of a story, right?
What the person wants the other person to see versus what mm-hmm. is actually their what right. their actual self-perception really is.
And so the opposite side of that then is so I can't necessarily define where the self-consciousness comes in, but you know it when it's not there. And I think you know it when it's not there, when the story becomes less about trying to create an image of yourself, and it's more about mm-hmm. sharing the emotions that you felt. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, like so many stories are just like, I did this, then I did this, then I did, they're written like a, we tell them like a Dick and Jane book, right? Mm-hmm. Very simplistic mm-hmm. reading. Mm-hmm. Instead of like, let me tell you how I felt in this moment. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. spend your time on that. Cause that's where we connect. Right. Everybody, mm-hmm. like anytime you talk about your feelings in that way, anytime you express that vulnerability or you express mm-hmm. that joy, the other person, it's, they're focusing in, right? And so that's the goal of storytelling, right? Is how do you tell a story that is not separating, but it's bringing you together,
right? Right. It's for those sensitive enough to be able to relate to that kind of communication, I think it creates different response and neurochemicals inside of us too. It's actually going to create what is happening with my computer? It seems to be glitching a little bit. Anyway, it's going to create a more oxytocin, because mm-hmm. you're going to feel shit. Is this breaking up? Are we still here?
You did good. It broke up for a split second.
Okay. Hopefully that will, I think I shifted something there.
So I'm going to ask you a question about this, Sam. Right on the spot here. So experientially and attempting at your very best to set aside your own self-consciousness, or at least acknowledge it and incorporate it into what might be an effort to be less self-conscious and more pure and honest in your representation of who you are when answering the following questions. The following question is about what your experience has now been in your interchange with William just now, as he walked from what I did, what I do, what I did, you know, I'm a water photographer, and to getting to what this is that he and all of us are trying to explore as we scratch into what it would mean to be self-consciousless. You know, defining self-consciousness as something that can only be defined by looking at what it's like when it's not there. What is it, you know, it's sort of like part of what my experience is, and this is what I want to sort of juxtapose with your experience as you meet William for the first time, is that my heart goes out to William as he attempts to use language to nullify self-consciousness as a significant part of his presentation, even as he's speaking now, in an effort to connect with you at a soul level. And Valentino, of course, and Valentino talking shit the whole time he's talking shit, man. You hear him over there, right? He's got plenty to say about this nonsense.
So my experience thus so far has been an experience of deep appreciation, that because my values are really around authentic communication and presence. And what William is speaking to here is it makes it very clear that William's doing a lot of deep diving, which I think anytime I feel that in another human being, it gives me a sense of optimism, let's say, in the future of humanity, that folks like William, speaks to you specifically, William, are helping to enable these types of conversations that take a lot of courage to actually have these types of conversations. Because in order to really call out the program and to acknowledge the program and to acknowledge that we all have these external personas that we would prefer to be seen by, that sort of protect the more vulnerable aspects of ourselves, but getting that doesn't always contribute to our best interests, both personally and collectively, and having the courage to address that and to do so publicly with someone that you've just met and with an audience of unknown folks out there, gives me an appreciation for your courage to do so and the vulnerability that it takes to do so, because it really does. It inherently, what you're describing is inherently vulnerable. You have to pass through a vulnerable state in order to ground into a more authentic expression of your inner self, the way that you are doing right now.
So let me speak to part B of that. Very, as usual, and as always, extraordinarily beautifully put, Sam. And the next question I have is sort of part B of that, which is, I think I brushed up against it at the end of what I just asked you, which is, when I'm in a room now with the two of you exploring this, there's a part, what goes on with my recognition of your, both of your vulnerabilities, and I guess now my vulnerability in exploring these topics that are outside the range of the, you know, the storyless string of I did this and then I did that and then I did this, but is really speaking towards the essence of our humanity. One of the things that is that, first of all, you're both musicians, and I feel like this creates a musician, or this is representative of musician, this capacity to speak beyond words into an area that otherwise doesn't have an open and obvious explanation as to what exists where you're talking about. So you're kind of stuck. You're deeply stuck by, like, having to play a symphony with bongo drums or something, you know, like the amount of tools that are available when you use linear language to explore what it is that we're talking about are very limited, extremely limited. And all we can do when we call ourselves vulnerable is approach it our very best by using the best notes and ideas that we can pull out of our musical selves to self-express something that otherwise isn't available typically in a linear language model. And what I'm noticing as I brother up with you three is, okay, or with us three, is like a compassion for taking on something that we know is impossible, but nevertheless has to be explored. We don't have a better way to do it. So we do it through words now, rather than through our guitars, which I would love to see the two of you, you know, even jam for a minute. It would be quite something. So I'd like to hear both of your opinions on that. It's sort of like music allows for access to this without having to explain what the music did. And that might also be true, you know, through words. That might also be true through art and drama and singing and writing and gardening and photography and, you know, those dancing, you know, There might be ways to get this done without the limitations of the linear sentence model, which really is profoundly limiting when discussing what I think it is that the two of you are attempting to brush up against.
Very much so. I think the language itself serves primarily as an invitation. The invitation meaning we can only speak of something from the abstract. And really, at the end of the day, there really is no clear definition between an inner world and an outer world. And it's a dynamic process that's constantly changing. The stories itself are constantly changing. So the stories we may discover in the moment that an aspect of the story that we're telling ourselves internally actually isn't even accurate. We may discover that in the moment. And I do that all the time. I catch myself discovering aspects of the story that I believe is true is actually not true at all. And that's, I have to sort of pause and take that in and integrate that, wow, that actually holds no water. That's not even true. Okay, now what do I want to do? And so, but I think the use of language is potentially very, I don't want to dismiss the power of language in its invitational aspects, because it does create a tool, if you will, to be able to say something beyond what we might be able to connect with in the nonlinear space-holding dimensions, because we've grown so far from being able to communicate intuitively with one another through the absence of language. I believe that we can cultivate that skill of communicating silently. And I've noticed even in silent retreats, if you spend a day or two in silence, suddenly a new faculty starts to emerge where you're able to start to communicate in this sort of almost sort of psychic way with one another. And it's very powerful and beautiful. But it's in terms of efficiency, there's an invitation that can occur with the use of the tool of language when it's used effectively and authentically. It invites us into that self-exploration. That's my thoughts. And I'm curious what your thoughts are, William.
Yeah, William.
Yeah, beautifully said. I think what's coming through for me is very much in alignment, and just adding on to everything you're saying. Yeah, just trying to add another dimension to it, right? So, like, why do we communicate, right? Like, it's to share information, usually through the vehicle of emotion, I find, right? Like, that's the way we connect deeply, is by sharing information through an emotional avenue, right? So speech is just one instrument. A guitar is another way you can allow people to feel those feelings. A big experience, like climbing a mountain, is another way to feel these experiences. They're all just vehicles to explain that. And so while we're really doing is like, when you're sharing feelings and you're sharing them authentically, I don't really think you can use the wrong words. I don't think that there is a combination of words that it's like a key that unlocks the feelings inside of you. I don't think that's true at all. I think it's the feeling that is the key, right? It's the feeling that's put behind those words. I can string together a bunch of half sentences, and as long as the feeling is there and I'm being authentic in it, I can still share that authentic feeling. This came up, this reminds me of a really life-changing experience that I had with my ex-girlfriend. And it was through this experience that I realized that I don't always think in thoughts, right? And I found this really strange. So she's an amazing human, very well connected to herself. She loved physical compliments, right? And I really had a hard time giving her physical compliments because I just felt. And the best way that I could share that feeling was through physical touch, right? Mm. And so she would try to help me to, she would be like, hey, like now's a really, like whatever, you know, I was like massaging her hips one day and she's like, hey, now's a really good time. Whatever you're thinking, turn that into a compliment. And I'm just like, but I'm not, like there aren't any words, right? Right? Mm. And so what I would say, like, give yourself permission to think in your feelings sometimes, right? Like, don't be scared to think in them, right? That feeling that you have in your gut, it's like, let it be there, right? Mm-hmm. Don't suppress it by trying to find the combination of words that, you know, compress it and try to get it to somebody. Just feel that feeling and puke it up on somebody. Like, give yourself permission to do that. Right. Yeah. Be beautiful about it. Like, be beautiful in that vulnerability, in all that. Right. And so that's kind of where we're like it's all about that frequency. It's like we're frequency sharers. We're just sharing frequency with each other, right?
Right.
And, you know, like, you know, like just by looking at someone's posture, you can tell how they're feeling for the most part, right? You can walk into a room, not to exchange a single word with somebody, and understand if they're full of joy or if they're absolutely miserable, right? Like I said, these are all just instruments. These bodies are instruments, right? The vocal box is an instrument. The hands are an instrument as we use all these things to explain these things. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to take these. So I mean, my definition of emotions are spiritual experiences, if you allow yourself to feel them, right? And what I mean by that is my definition of a spiritual experience is when you feel something outside your body as well as inside of it at the same time. Right. It's all encompassing. It's bigger than you. Right. And some people call those like five dimensional emotions, whatever it might be. But when you actually allow yourself to feel that emotion bigger than you. Right. That's what we're trying to communicate. Like there's no way to share that on this physical plane. There's no way to share it authentically. So the best we can do is just find these analogs to share these vibrations with each other. Really that's the art of it. Right? It is art. Communication is an art, right? Sure. I like to communicate. I try to communicate as poetically as I can. Try to be as articulate as I can. Doesn't always work. I fail at it constantly. But you know, like I'm not afraid to do it because it feels authentic. It feels like it's coming from a place that's outside of me. It feels like a way that I can allow more people to feel these beautiful feelings that I'm feeling as well.
I have a great question to start the second half of the show. Response. It was really well said, truly on the heels of what we, like, that was just brilliant. I have a question I can't wait to start the second half of the show with that I'm going to open us up with. But in the meantime, let's go to our ever-loving commercial, and we will be back in about a minute. So thanks for hanging on. I do have a phone number if you want to call in. It's 1-888-627-6008. If you want to call in and join this wonderful conversation with William Curry, Sam Morris, and myself, feel free to call that number. We'll be glad to entertain whatever your question is and incorporate you if that's interesting for you as well.
Repeat that number one more time.
1-888-627-6008.
I think I might call us. All right. Now that I've got that number, I think I'm going to call us.
All right. Why don't you do it? And we're off to commercial. Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Fred again. I wanted to explain to you a little bit about one of the names I have called the Undoctor. What is the Undoctor? Well, after about 15 years in the field of me being misaligned with what I was doing, because I was medicating people even knowing that medications were not the right answer, and I was diagnosing people even though I didn't always believe that they had the diagnosis that I said that they had, even though they did meet the criteria, etc., I like seeing humans for exactly who they are and who they're not, and not as a diagnosis. So in 2006, I began the process of becoming the undoctor. I unmedicated, undiagnosed, and then undoctrinated a bunch of people. Like, people no longer had to come to a psychiatrist because their condition's cleared. This isn't true for everyone. It may not be true for you, but for some folks who know that their diagnosis doesn't fit and who know that they don't want to keep going through with medications and don't want to be seen as someone who's defective or afflicted, this turned out to be a great intervention. Over time, I stopped doing that, and I no longer do a whole lot of conventional psychiatry. Now I just help people walk through their life and find their true voice. I connect with people straight up, not as if there's a power gradient between a doctor and a patient, but as two humans connecting and resonating with each other. As it turns out, that's where all healing emanates from. So today, I've developed the Welcome to Humanity brand over the last 6 or 7 years, and that really takes into consideration all of this. It is self-explanatory. Basically, each and every experience that we have with humanity is just as exquisite as another, even if it's deeper and calmer. From there, we get to actually share these human experiences. From there, we get to resonate and connect, and from there, healing takes place. I also have been helping people with their true voice, and that's why you're here today at True Voice with Dr. Fred. I help people find that true voice, really their authentic self, their core value system, and then deliver it effectively into a world that is eagerly awaiting to hear you. Without your voice, no one will ever hear you. And without your true voice, no one will ever know you.
But with your true voice, you can find healing, peace, and love. True voice is what it takes to end all wars. So welcome to True Voice with Dr. Fred. Welcome back, everyone. Let me give you that phone number again in case you didn't get it. It's 1-888-627-6008. You're here with William Curry, Sam Morris, and myself. And we're taking on communication, effective communication with and without self-consciousness and the storytelling and who is the storyteller. My question is goes like this. I've been trying to formulate it during the commercial, and I hope that it comes out the way that I think there's something compelling inside of it. So, you know, as we now find ourselves in a present culture concerned, most of us concerned that we have become too electronic, you know, that everybody's thumbing around and emails and texts, and we're just all tied to computers. In fact, we're in a computer right now, of course, and we're just pixelated and we're fractaled and we're metaversed and we're AI'd, and we have technology coming in and truly affecting the foundation of our communication styles. So let's use that and we're concerned like that this transformation, this paradigmatic shift forced upon us might really alter or in fact disassemble all of what we might have built up until now in life. And it could be a threat to all of human communication. So if we accept that as a basic premise, the next thing I have is if you were deaf, okay? It's not just, okay, let's say you became deaf. How would you then communicate? What if there was no more sound anymore? Like no more. Like we woke up tomorrow and nobody has sound. There's no sound. There's no music. There's no voice. There's no sound. There's no chanting, there's no drumming, there's no sound. How would we then develop as humans? And could it be that at one point sound got bought as the way we would try to communicate, the way we would share? We bought that we could make these vocal cords move and that with our utterances, make meaning out of it and then string it together and get our points across somehow. At some point we bought that. What if that was as much a paradigmatic threatening shift to the silence that existed beforehand as our present paradigmatic shift threat is? So my question is, if we talk about what we talk about, or we can do music, or we can do sound-based communication one way or another. And then Sam spoke briefly to in a silent retreat on day two or three, you get this, you know, a new way to communicate that is without sound as its primary formula. What happens to the world if somehow sound for all of us now, not just going Beethoven, I'm talking like for all of us, sound disappears? Could it be that we would then learn an even more precise way, a more effective way? Is it possible that that wouldn't be entirely a deficiency, that we would grow into a new communication style that is otherwise untapped as of now because we lean so righteously on sound as being the best thing we have, when in fact, maybe sound isn't the best thing we have. It's just the best that we, you know, maybe it's not the best thing available, but it is the best that we have. I hope my question comes out right to at least be interesting, and I'd love to hear your views on that.
William, you want to start us off with that?
Yeah. First, I'd love to start off with being in film school, we studied a lot of sound and how it relates to the senses. And it turns out as humans, we're actually not very good at hearing, right? You ever get that phone call, especially before caller ID, right? When you have that landline and somebody's like, hey, what's going on? And you're like, I have no idea who this is, right? Because you can't remember the voice until they say it. Then all of a sudden an image pops in your head of that person. And all of a sudden it all makes sense, right? Sound is this really beautiful, like additional frequency, additional sense that helps all of our other senses work. And definitely during the pandemic, everybody's wearing a mask. The one thing that I saw is it was really difficult to understand people because you couldn't see them. You couldn't see their face. You couldn't see their emotions. You couldn't see this physical thing. There's now a barrier mentally and physically between everybody. So what I think would actually happen. So I do believe that our other senses are actually playing a much bigger part in our perception of communication. In particular, I think our vision, you know, like how you connect with somebody really depends on, like, you'll know right away through the amount of eye contact you get. And not only the amount of eye contact you get, but the gentleness in the eye contact, the, how much it invites somebody in, right? How your eyes flow and actually experience the features of someone's face as they're speaking, as they're emoting, right? Right. How you change when you start saying something emotional or going through something emotional, how does my mirroring change, right? How do I handle that, right? Am I scared to show you that what you're feeling, I'm also now feeling too, right? And so what I think would happen is I think we'd get a lot more in touch with that. I think some people would hopefully fully embrace that. It'd be really, for those of us like myself, I'm not very animated physically. So it's been a challenging thing through my life. But like, that's a challenge I would have to be up for. I'd have to be up to being more animated, being able to show the emotions through the physical body, showing how my physical body works. And then just extrapolating, I can just see like our bodies being more functional, our bodies being more limber and in movement and things like that, because that's not the focus of all that. So I really think as a species, I think we'd make a lot better eye contact and maybe actually connect deeper without having to explain things. Like you're just at the base emotion now, like information and emotion. It's like, this is the way we got, you know, can we share that together without using words?
Yeah. Yeah.
And no writing either. Like, let's take that out of the equation too.
Yeah. No, I love that. Love that. Yeah. I think for me, I would personally miss the shit out of music. That's for sure. that would be really, really a tough transition. But I am I'm going to join you in the development of other senses. I think we would adapt somewhat rapidly in certain respects. And I think the adaptation could actually serve us in a way that addresses some of the problematic things about what we started this conversation off with this, this rift between how we present ourselves externally to the world and our internal world. I think that rift with the absence of verbal communication, my sense is that that rift would begin to lessen, and that our state, what we are thinking and our behaviors, there would be more of a transparency between our internal state and what we present externally, because we wouldn't be able to use language to manipulate. We would have to find a new way of communicating that was not manipulative. We'd have to find, and when I say manipulative, I don't mean that in a negative sense of the term, like, because inherently in communicating externally, in order to communicate that which we believe we want to have others perceive, there's an inherent manipulation of language, tone, texture in our communication, et cetera, that is sort of adjusting ourselves accordingly to the circumstances to try to get a favorable outcome in that situation. But reducing that input would actually seemingly also create a more transparent or smaller rift between the internal experience and what we're communicating with one another.
Hmm.
Fred, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I'm hearing both of you, and there's this idea that it's not as scary as it sounds. That, yes, you would miss music and we would grieve, you know, in my speaking, I don't know I would be immediately cut off from all that I have left in my capacity to communicate. whether, you know, and as coming from both of you in the world of musician, you know, that it would be missed, and then we would compensate or maybe be backed up into a way that communication skills through our bodies or through our connection or through extra senses that we otherwise haven't described using words yet. You know, this idea that we only have five senses is kind of lame, actually, very lame. And you know, that we would then have the capacity, maybe, and I hear you both saying that, that in some ways fairly rapidly, it's possible that our communication quality would actually improve massively without words or without sound. That you both kind of leaned on that, that it might happen massively, that we have a connection, a direct connection in our emoting through our eye contact or through whatever we're using, as you know, we would then use our vision. So we would lean probably on vision as our next source. And through our eye contact, we would create whatever we created, and we would get whatever we got. Even as I look at William now, there's some communication that we can create with each other, even in the last 3 to 5 seconds, that exceeds anything we could have said to each other in that same 3 to 5 seconds. Now, that would happen to all of humanity and maybe all living objects, you know, including like Valentino. And there'd be like, it almost, this is like a confirmation in some ways that although sound is all we have, and we have been able to manipulate or, you know, create the beauty of music through sound, you know, if you listen, you know, to the classics, if you, I'll, you know, all the way, Sam knows it a couple times now this week, that I spoke to listening to Mozart for 3 hours the other night. It's like, what? Mm-hmm. What? Like every second, it's like, what the fuck is that? So beautiful, every note choice and every rhythm and every harmony and every tempo, you know, so remarkable. But is that also limited inside the idea that someone has to make a sound and we have to hear it and process it? And we're so top heavy on music and sound being the source of what keeps humans, what keeps our network, our mycelium like selves together.
I was just occurring to me that there's another component too around, if we were to all lose all hearing and all access to sound whatsoever, here's the other component we haven't discussed yet. It would create a common experience, which would inherently bring with it an empathy, that because of the common challenge that we all had to adapt to. So there, we wouldn't be able to lead with our separateness. We would all be, at least for a period of time, as that transition occurred, we would be recognizing the common challenge that we faced and having to work with one another to adapt to that common challenge of not, no longer having hearing, which would increase our level of empathy and connection with one another.
If it happened globally instantly to all 8 billion of us.
Yeah. I mean, Imagine September 11th on a whole other level, you know, that brought people together for a short time around a common challenge that we're facing, feeling victimized by something that we all shared in common. So if that happened on a global level with one of our primary senses, you can just imagine the way in which that could potentially be scaled at a whole other level of global empathy. Yeah. I'm almost going to recommend it. I hate to miss music, but
my biggest takeaway from this is the more you simplify it, the easier it is to get to the main like syntax of communication, right? Mm-hmm. So when you remove this voice that can say anything that it wants, whenever it wants, right? It can create stories from nothing, you know, it can tell a story that's not factual. It can lie, it can manipulate both in beautiful ways and in negative ways. Like once you remove the process for that, all that's left is truth, right? That's just this very streamlined communication. I believe that the syntax for communication is inside of our bodies. It's independent of language. It's independent of us speaking a physical language, right? Just, you know, if we go back to like 300,000 years ago, cavemen grunting, like they probably had different grunts. It wasn't an actual language, but there's the syntax that's inherent, I think, in our species. And we would just find new ways to express those, that syntax, right? And as humans, why we're the dominant species on this planet is because we got really good at recognizing patterns, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's something that we would pick up very quickly. I think we would actually adapt pretty quickly as humans to it. So that's kind of my biggest takeaway. When you get down to the simplicity, and I guess that's kind of the overarching lesson of this interaction here, is the more you can simplify it, the more powerful it is, right?
It's like taking out some of the variables, which then allow for a common experience. I mean, if you think about what mindfulness practices are, or Zen, really at the core, it's around simplifying the inner experience. And the more we can simplify the inner experience, the more the mind naturally quiets down, because there are fewer variables and less complexity that we have to process with our brains. And the less complexity and the fewer variables that we have to process, the more the brain can just naturally start to quiet and start to access a different, more intuitive, more universal sense of consciousness that isn't coming from the perception of separation, which is actually just coming primarily from the mid to high level beta brainwave function, which is, you know, that in the default mode network, which is constantly telling a story and analyzing environmental input to be able to tell the story in the way that it's perceiving it. But the fewer variables and the less complexity, the more we tap into something more basic. But that basicness is actually more universal, actually, because it doesn't have the perception of separation included in it.
The things that come up as we skid into the end of this meeting here is that, would there be a need for stories at all? Could stories, and would they be necessary if in fact we couldn't tell them and hear them? The second question on the heels of that there would be, is it possible to lie using any other senses? And I mean, there is, you can kind of, I could put a rose smelling flower in front of him and he might think that it's a rose. Is there?
Oh, I think humans will always be capable of deceit.
Always capable of deceit. Yeah. Like very what imaginative. Would be, yeah.
I'm sure Helen Keller fucked some people over.
I wrote a story once. I wrote this my one and only major award-winning story was called Global Madness, What We Must Do to Unite. And Sam, that's what you're brushing up against here. You know, the punchline of that story is that something that got all 7.8 billion of us activated, it's, you know, either get it or perish. So sort of like, you know, a Martian invasion might be enough. If we knew the Martians were going to be here in 2 months, would that be enough to separate our differences so that we could work together as 7.8 billion? Now, that story is already a little bit old because I think a Martian invasion would not be enough. But if it was forced upon us, I really hear some, you know, like, wow, access to peace. Like what you said, you know, I might recommend it, even though I might have to give up music to do so. Would it be enough to at least buy some time and create an entirely new communication, creative connection network that could really allow us to all speak the same language, which is none?
We'd also have to cut out texting too.
No.
We're not doing that. Altogether.
No, we're not doing that.
Yeah. No, because that keeps the language apparatus working.
I got rollover time on my AT&T account, and I'm not giving that up. Yeah. It's going
to
be.
Yeah, no, I mean, anything, the written word stimulates the mind to create language too.
Right.
So we would actually have to cut out verbal communication with written language. I think we could potentially benefit from taking maybe a 3-year hiatus from any kind of verbal communication and see where we are 3 years down the road.
Yeah, let's submit that to Congress.
Great global experiment.
Yeah, let's submit it to the World Council. You know, that thing they do in Finland, you know, Davos. We could tell Davos we're all about that. So
in Switzerland, yeah.
Yeah, Switzerland, yeah. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Anyways, we have about 2 minutes left. So this conversation went very well. I'm very happy with how it went. Thank you for gracing us, both of you, on the True Voice show. And before we close, I'd love to get a word or two from you about where you're at on the end of the conversation. Or Sam, you know, if you want to tell people how they might get a hold of you, and maybe we'll do the same thing with William. Let's just put that out there.
Sure. Go to my website, which is zenwarriortraining.com, or my email is sam@zenwarriortraining.com. That's a great way of getting in touch with me, either one of those formats.
Well, worth getting in touch with. Thank you. And
yeah, and how I'm doing is I feel both externally and internally very satisfied.
Thank you.
Fulfilled. And it's a real pleasure to be connecting with you too.
Thank you. William, how do we get a hold of you?
Well, if it's up to me, I would not want either of you to contact me ever again. No, I'm kidding. No, best way to contact me is through my Instagram. You can see a lot of my photography and video work through there. It's at The Limitless Bear. That'd be the best way to reach me currently.
Awesome. Super cool. And how are you feeling at the end of the conversation?
Oh, I'm feeling inspired. I'm feeling inspired to tell stories every time we talk about this with anybody. It's just how can I get this story across quicker, you know, that emotional aspect to it and connect.
Love it.
Thank you. Awesome. I feel totally rewarded and totally grateful and really warm with both of you. You're beautiful men, and it's just an honor to be your friends and to be here. Thank you so much for a beautiful conversation. We're off and running. Catch y'all on the flip side. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll see you next Tuesday. Bye for now.
Cheers, guys.
Hello, everybody, and I just wanted to thank you for getting through another episode of True Voice with Dr. Fred. Wasn't that great? It is so much fun to interact with people and then interact with my listenership about really finding True Voice and then bringing it forward. I really have never done anything more important than this, and I'm finally aligned with myself by helping others find their True Voice. Let's find your alignment. What do you really want in your life?